So moving now to series four papers, and I'm handing over to Vincent.
Good morning to everybody. We move on to agenda papers 4 to 4C, which discuss three matters arising when a reporting entity has a non-hyperinflationary presentation currency and translates the results and financial position of a foreign operation whose functional currency is hyperinflationary. Agenda paper 4 is for informational purpose only. It discusses more generally the application of the relevant requirements in IS 21 and IS 29 and also describes the outreach and additional research performed on the request. I will now move on to agenda paper 4A. In the situation described in this request, the reporting entity applies the restate translate approach when consolidating its hyperinflationary foreign operation. Applying this approach might result in a change to the reporting entity's net investment in the hyperinflationary foreign operation. As illustrated in the example used in this agenda paper, this change typically includes two effects. A restatement effect resulting from restating the results and financial position of the hyperinflationary foreign operation applying the requirement in IS 29, and a translation effect resulting from translating the entity's interest in the net asset of the hyperinflationary foreign operation at a closing rate that differs from the previous closing rate. This paper discusses how the reporting entity presents the restatement and the translation effects. Paragraph 22 to 28 summarize findings from our outreach and additional research. Paragraph 29 to 60 set out our analysis. We conclude that the reporting entity either presents both the restatement and the translation effect in other comprehensive income, if the entity considers that the combination of those two effects meets the definition of an exchange difference in IS 21, or present the translation effect in other comprehensive income and the restatement effect in equity, if the entity considers that only this translation effect meets the definition of an exchange difference in IS 21. I would like to direct your attention to question 1 on page 19 of the paper and ask whether you agree with our technical analysis and conclusion.
I agree with the staff's analysis that there are two ways that you can read the guidance. I think as we thought through the impact of particularly Argentina on our specific financial statements, we certainly had a lot of discussion about this particular issue, looked at the firms, the big four at least, firms' guidance, and at least one of the firms has the same conclusion and explicitly states it's an accounting policy choice. So I do agree that this is where we got to internally. I agree with the staff's analysis, and I think that there is diversity in practice.
Okay, thanks, Bonnie. Bertrand.
I agree with the staff analysis and the staff conclusion. Feedback in France saying that maybe the example that was used in the agenda paper was a bit too simplified, and maybe what could have been useful is to perform an example with a restatement effect in the P&L of the period. I'm pretty sure it wouldn't obviously not change the conclusion of the agenda paper, but as a matter of illustration, it could be useful to have this, and it could be useful to explain a bit more the main reason why you reached this conclusion.
Jake?
I agree with the conclusions reached. I had one sort of ancillary concern in the way something's articulated, and it links back to a paragraph in IS 1. And the paragraph in IS 1, I think, is paragraph 88 that talks about when you're allowed to take income and expenses to OCI, and as I read that paragraph, it says you can do that when allowed by another standard. And what we have here in, I think, IAS 21 is two sections. One section which talks about what you do with income and expenses in respect of non-hyperinflationary economies, and that explicitly talks about when you can take translation effects to OCI, and then a section on hyperinflationary entities, which doesn't explicitly state that. And I guess my concern is that it's sort of implicitly referred to in IAS 21, and I wonder whether there is a consequential impact that this will actually dilute the power that I think IAS 1 has in basically requiring all income and expenses to be taken to P&L unless explicitly allowed for by another standard. But that's,
I think we think it's implicitly allowed, but
yeah, we can.
I'm Young Soo.
I also agree with analysis and conclusion. You know, the analysis was very logical and very easy to understand, so I should say I enjoy reading it. However, I have some concerns about view A. You know, what I'm trying to say is that if we just follow the standard, view A and view B, both of them are allowable. I have no objection to that. But I'm not quite sure whether view A is really providing some useful information to the users. I have two reasons. The first one is that there are two ways to compute the restatement effect and translating effect. The staff calculated the translating effect first. But the other way is to calculate the restatement effect first. Then we're going to come up with different numbers. So if we allow the view A, and if any company adopts view A in their accounting, they will come up with different numbers for translation and the restatement effect. So I think that makes some kind of diversity in the practice. That is one concern I have. And the other concern I have for view A is that, as staff explained in the staff paper, the restatement effect always carries some translation or exchange effect into that. So no matter how we compute the restatement effect, it includes the translation effect into the restatement effect. So if we just let the company report the restatement effect, the innocent readers might think that all the effects are coming from restatement, even though there's some translation effect included in it. So I'm not sure whether that is a good way to, you know, give information to the people. So, you know, since this is just a gender decision, we have to follow the accounting standard. And reading was right, but I should say I still have some concerns about view A.
But you do agree with the staff analysis?
Oh, yes, yes.
Okay, thank you. Guy?
I would start by saying I agree with the analysis laid out in terms of the translation effect being an exchange difference, and that IAS 21 dictates what is to be done with that. I also agree with the analysis around the restatement effect and different perspectives on whether that too is an exchange difference or perhaps something else. And I can see the thought process around, you know, the two different ways of thinking about whether that's an exchange difference or not. So I think in those respects, I agree with the analysis in the paper. The one point of pause I had on this, and this doesn't, I'm not suggesting that this bears on the analysis in terms of the current reading of the standard, but it does strike me as odd to split. If I think forward to any future recycling on disposal and whatnot, it strikes me as quite odd that I would recycle one element and not both. And that part of the outcome of the split approach causes me to question how useful it is to split. Because I would have thought, I would have personally thought that the explanation in, I think it's paragraph 47B2 of the paper that, you know, really equates the restatement effect to a phenomenon that's, you know, closely associated with exchange rates, that makes sense to me. And so split accounting whereby I'm going to recycle one element and not both is not a terribly comforting answer at the end of the day. That being said, I think the analysis in the paper in terms of the current reading of the standards would seem to enable a view that the restatement effect is either an exchange difference or something else.
Okay, thank you. If I could encourage everybody to be clear on whether they agree with the analysis, and then separately, if they've got other observations, that would be helpful. You've both been very good, but just to remind everybody. Bob?
I agree with the staff analysis. I agree that you can be read both ways, and you come up with two alternatives, A and B. And so I'm happy with everything you laid out. There's just one sentence that I have a slight concern about in the agenda decision in the last paragraph. On the basis of responses to outreach, the committee observed little, if any, diversity between the two approaches. My concern is that I think that sense is going to cause questions. What is the diversity? What is mostly people are doing? I'm not sure that sentence is necessary. I still agree with the agenda decision, and the standard setting is not needed, and don't need to raise this to the board, and there's no not enough benefit to address this. It's just that minor point.
Okay, you can come back to the words. Carl?
Yeah, my suggestion was exactly on the same sentence, especially based on some preliminary research we were able to access in Brazil. Out of 1,000 companies, 12 companies reported investments in Argentina, and it appears at first glance that there is diversity. So, therefore, I also struggle with the sentence on the basis of the response. I think it's not necessary and can bring more questions.
Brian?
Other than this, I agree with the staff analysis and conclusion.
So, contrary to the general drift of the discussion, I do not agree. I note, I guess, as Cole does, that to the extent there's evidence in the paper, there is some evidence of diversity. It seems that 5 out of 15 who you've identified having a policy do view C. And I guess the key question is whether or not view C is acceptable given the current wording of the standard. I think the agenda paper does a very good job of arguing why, if the standard were to become specific about this point, it may well not permit view C, but I'm not convinced that the analysis demonstrates fully or sufficiently that view C is not acceptable under the current standards. I think most of the drafting in IS 21 that talks about foreign operations hangs off a paragraph 39, that's very clearly flagged as relating to a non-hyperinflationary foreign operation. So the question then becomes whether or not it's sufficiently clear when you put all the references together that this specific approach view C is not permitted. I find the case almost but not quite made. I think IS 29 has a very distinctive approach. It requires something that might otherwise feel a bit like a gain or a loss to go to equity. So I'm left with this item that I have to decide, is it more like an exchange difference? Is it more like the thing that IS 29 tells me should be in equity? And I don't think that the standards as drafted quite conclude on that question for me. So maybe I would like to see fewer approaches to be available, but I don't feel right now I could rule out view C.
Okay, thanks. Bruce?
Thanks, Sue. To start off with, I guess to answer the first question you asked, I do agree with the conclusion the staff have come to, but I guess I'm probably somewhere in between where kind of Guy and Brian went, because I don't know if I necessarily like where the answer got. Now, I'll tell you why I think that. What interests me the most is when I ask companies about whether or not they had done this, what frightened me was the number of companies who didn't even know this was an option to do the equity one. They kind of were all in the view of this is an OCI thing, and, well, that's interesting. We need to go back and think about whether we like that or not and whether that can change. So what worried me is by asking people this, I've given them a wonderful opportunity to now do something that they'd never considered doing in the past. And I think that my fear is that was quite a lot of companies, and my fear is that I think that when we go there and say, well, there's not that much diversity, I genuinely believe it's because I think unless companies, and it was interesting, obviously the larger companies, a lot of the more kind of, those who are heavily exposed, I mean, as I expect, have done a lot of analysis and got to that answer, you kind of got a little bit outside of that and people had never considered it. So my worry is that once we come out with a gender decision like this, we could kind of be driving diversity in that we're now saying, well, hang on, you may never have thought about two ways. We're going to put out there that there actually are two ways to do this, and I'm concerned that we're going to get people using it as an opportunity to do something different. On the basis of that, I then say to myself, well, if we've clearly got an answer, I'm kind of echoing a bit what Guy said, but when you've kind of got an answer that has such diverse answers, such diverse results, that we've got a situation where I can kind of defer some of this never having to recycle when I sell it versus I can, then I start getting questions from people, well, is this an accounting policy choice? Can I do this on an entity by entity? How do we deal with that? And I just fear that we're going to start seeing more diversity as a result of this as opposed to not. So I do agree that I agree with where the staff got to in terms of the paper. My view is I don't necessarily think that it's something we should just sit and say, okay, well, there is diversity, go forth and account. I personally prefer to see us do something to address it.
Okay, thanks. Michael?
I guess I, similar to Bruce, I think, when I read it, I can see view A or view B. I feel like view B is probably the right answer. Is that the combining one, I think?
Mm-hmm.
But to be honest, I find it a little harder to read in the words of the standard than view A, because I'm not, you know, is it really an exchange difference? It feels more like something else to me. But I feel like because it's the right answer, depending on how significant it is, perhaps it is something the committee wants to do some sort of amendment to 21 or 29 to fix, rather than depending on how significant that diversity is. But I could see view A or view B, so I agree with where the staff gets to.
I'm not sure how much appetite there's going to be at the board table for us tinkering here, but Lisa?
So I agree with the staff paper. I agree with both view A and view B, that you could do both. But the thing that I would really like, and I think it just kind of relates to the points that were being made, is I feel as if there needs to be maybe a bit more of an explanation as to why view B would be acceptable and how inflation risk can meet the definition of being an exchange difference. I know there's some information in the footnote, but maybe bringing that out a bit more, because it, when you read the paper, it comes across as if it is a little bit of a policy choice, and there's not much guidance on, okay, well, what do you have to demonstrate that most of that inflation risk is related to exchange risk to meet that definition? So I think that would be quite helpful.
Okay, thank you. Carsten?
I also agree with the staff analysis. In terms of the different approaches, I'm not uncomfortable with view A. I also think view B is acceptable as well. So in terms of the exact calculation, if you apply view A, I had some questions, but that probably goes beyond the scope of the paper, so I don't think we need to go into that. So overall, I'm comfortable with what the staff has got to. I was also struggling a little bit with the sentence in the agenda decisions that were mentioned by others. Perhaps we should all support deleting that one. So otherwise, I agree.
Thanks, Carsten. Goro?
Yes, thank you. I basically agree with the staff's analysis and conclusions. And among the two alternative views which are applicable to the fact pattern in the submission, I believe that financial statement users should prefer the transaction to be accounted for according to view A, because I would want to know the sources of changes in equity breaking down into the change from restatement and also the one from the translation. And this is something like that the portfolio manager's performance breakdown into the contributions from stock selection, sector allocation, and combined factors. We call this as an attribution analysis. I think that this is kind of information is quite important and relevant to the investors. Having said that, I'm afraid that the view A could be quite costly, and unless that the entity have a very significant exposure to the hyperinflation economy, I think that view B would be also acceptable to users.
Thank you, Marie.
Yeah, my thinking was, don't we think that it might be useful to have the example in the agenda decision so that people fully understand the difference between the two effects? And maybe it also might be useful, because we said now that we do not expect diversity in practice, but maybe to say something about what is said in paragraph 63, which is that if you use view A, it will be costly, and it's not expected to be used, and it's complex, costly, and maybe also a bit arbitrary, just at some point, just to decide between these two elements, so that we'll not we might not expect any more diversity, because I do agree that the issue is do we have more diversity, because now we said that's possible, which is people might not have think of, so maybe we could try to explain why is it technically possible, but maybe not something that is expected in a way or another.
Okay, thank you. You haven't got your card up again, have you? Also, do you have any comments? No? Okay, so can I get a show of hands then on, on question two, whether the committee agrees with the staff's recommendation not to add the matter to the standard setting agenda?
2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13.
Not to say we don't get lots of letters suggesting otherwise. Okay, so now moving on to the draft tentative agenda decision. So I've heard a couple of things that maybe you want to respond to, Vonson, if that's all right. One is a couple of people have raised the comment on the sentence about diversity, and the other suggestion was Lisa's one, which was whether we could add anything at all in terms of this point about whether it is an exchange difference or not.
And Marie. Yeah.
And Marie. Yeah. Do you want to talk about those two points first, just so people have got the context of whether we might propose any of those additions so people can react to those as well?
Do you want to react? So I think,
yes,
tell me if you agree.
Yes, for the last sentence in the tentative agenda decision, so that we might be capable of clarifying what are the two approaches, because we were referring to the acceptable approaches as we have identified them in the agenda paper, so being basically being the split presentation or the presentation
in
full.
Continue.
Yes, or the presentation.
We just strike it.
Yeah, okay, so,
so we can either clarify this or strike the sentence as mentioned by Patrina. But we,
I think I heard most people saying we don't think the sentence is needed and could be confusing, so I think I was maybe leaning towards...
So this is the diversity sentence?
Yeah, the sentence starts with on the basis.
So deleting the sentence on the last page, paragraph... page 23, on the basis of responses, that sentence, proposing deleting that?
Yeah.
All right. Guy?
I think on sentence, I think... the diversity that sentence is referring to, or the lack of diversity that sentence is referring to, is just the notion of split accounting.
Yes.
But there is diversity on, for entities that aren't splitting, you know, some are putting it to OCI, some are putting it to equity. And I think if we were to leave that in, if we were to more clearly state we haven't observed diversity around split accounting, like I think the point would come across better. But you know, we could also just take it out altogether.
That might be simpler, unless anybody objects violently. Mm-hmm. Bonnie?
No, I was just going to say, I think there is diversity in practice. It may not be material, but I think there is.
Bruce?
I just had, just want to pick up a bit on Mary's comment. I mean, I kind of agree that the example was very helpful. I mean, to be very honest with you, I'm not convinced that, having not read the entire paper, I would have got there. Having understood it, maybe it's just the simplicity of how my mind works, but I found that the example was very useful in terms of seeing exactly what you meant. Now, I know we don't normally put those type of examples in, but I just feel that given here we're splitting those two things, it's not a make or break for me on whether I'd agree with it, but I found that having that example would have helped me understand what the issue is a lot clearer than what we had articulated. Just because of the nature, this is one of those things where we are splitting equity, P&L. I don't know. Just the way I read it.
I think that the point being raised and the question comes down to whether we think on page 21, when we describe the two effects, so on page 21 there's an A and B, you know, A describing the restatement effect and B describing the translation effect, whether we think those descriptions are adequate as they are, or whether we either need to expand the description or
that's just why that little example just to me made it so clear what you're actually talking about. And I think the reason I say this is because when I asked people about this, a lot of people said to me, can you actually explain what you're talking about? And I actually had to take them through that example to show them what I meant. So
it certainly helped me when I read the paper.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And without that, I'm not convinced people get there.
Can we do that?
Well, the problem with that is, yes, that's a bit tricky because we could very enter very specific details, which is quite unusual, and it's quite unusual for a tentative agenda decision. As Bertrand mentioned, with an example that we try to keep simple because we wanted you to understand thoroughly the issue. So we would not be very supportive of bringing further computation in an agenda decision. Or
could you not do it without numbers, just showing the split in terms of, it's more the presentation, I think, that was quite important for people to realize what exactly you were talking about.
If we took away, I don't know if that's enough for you, that we will have a very close look, because what I picture is, at least in what we bring into the tentative agenda decision, well, it would be very unusual to bring in, say, the full example. But I think if we could look at a way that we focus on, is there anything more we can add there to explain these a bit better? And using numbers in a sense. And maybe we'll take away and have a look to see, you know, what's possible, maybe if it's possible to bring in a bit of an extra numbered explanation from the example without sort of expanding all of the detail of the example.
Mary?
I wondered if the staff, once you know they looked at what Petrina said, if you ended up feeling that you really had to do an example, maybe publish it as part of update but not include it in the agenda decision that lives on, so that when people are looking at and reacting to the agenda decision, they have the benefit. You know, there's sometimes when we put things in above or below, and just say, you know, this is the example they considered, and then here's the agenda decision. It wouldn't live on with the agenda decision, but would kind of help address Vincent's concern about that's an awful lot of detail for an agenda decision, if what Petrina suggested doesn't work.
I mean, I guess it's just, even if I just look at that table, and I'm trying to think of what page it's on, you know, we just kind of showed the split between how we presented them. I mean, I agree, I wouldn't go into
seven.
The detail. Yeah, wherever it was. Just that almost, it's almost just having that page 7 to me was kind of explained. I mean, that to me is the table I used to explain exactly what the issue was. Mm-hmm. And you could do that without having to give a whole numeric example behind it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you guys take a look at it.
And it might be the sort of thing ultimately where if the agenda decision were finalised, it would be useful to have some sort of educational material as well. Mm-hmm. Cheng Wu.
Yes. This might not be related to the agenda decision, but I'd like to ask Bonnie, you said that you just kept saying the kind of diversity of the decision. Right? So some people suggested some kind of amendment possibility of the standards to reduce the choice of their accounting. So that's the. So is it? Do you think this is quite serious in practice of kind of a diversity of this?
I wasn't suggesting standard setting. Mm-hmm. I was suggesting that there is diversity in practice. Mm-hmm. The way the standards are written, I think it reflects perhaps the different views that you can come to, which I think the staff clearly articulated in the paper. So I agree with how the standards are written. If we want to reduce diversity, then yes, standard setting is. In my view, standard setting would be required.
So you feel there are.
I'm okay with what it is.
Yeah, it's okay. The agenda decision is final. It's okay. But in future, if you think this in a diversity so serious, to enough to amend something.
I think the diversity either is not material, which is why maybe it's not evident in some of the research that the staff did. But I think Bruce's comment that perhaps the clients that he spoke to hadn't considered the kind of splitting possibility. One of the firms makes it very clear that it is an accounting policy choice under IS 8. It's very clear in their guidance. Other firms aren't so clear, but it doesn't come to a conclusion. So I think, you know, we certainly looked at both options. We read the one firm's guidance and kind of went in that direction, made an accounting policy choice, but it wasn't that material, so I don't recall if we disclosed it. I don't remember. But it wasn't material, so I don't know that we called it out specifically. So there is diversity. I think it's up to the board, perhaps, if they want to reduce that diversity. But, I mean, as a committee, if we think that the diversity is problematic, then we should recommend something to be done. But I take Sue's point that perhaps there's bigger fish to fry that the board want to address.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so on the basis of that, could I get a show of hands from the committee on the draft agenda decision, the tentative agenda decision, with the sentence that refers to diversity struck through, and with an undertaking from the staff to investigate an efficient means to illustrate what
translation and restatement effects mean.
Yes. Efficient. Yes.
2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13.
Thank you.
Okay, Vincent, back to you.
Mm-hmm. So now we move to agenda paper 4B. This agenda paper discusses how the reporting entity presents the cumulative amount of exchange differences that have arisen from translating the foreign operation before the foreign operation becomes hyperinflationary, and we refer to this amount in the paper as being the pre-hyperinflation translation reserve. Specifically, the submitter asks whether, at the beginning of the first period during which the foreign operation becomes hyperinflationary, the reporting entity reclassifies within equity the pre-hyperinflation translation reserve. Paragraph 19 to 24 summarize findings from our outreach and additional research. In the light of the analysis of the applicable requirements set out in paragraph 25 to 38 of the paper, we conclude that the reporting entity does not reclassify within equity the pre-hyperinflation translation reserve relating to the foreign operation. Instead, it retains these reserves as a separate component of equity. I would like now to direct your attention to question 1 on page 10 of the paper and ask whether you agree with our analysis and conclusion.
I agree with the staff's analysis that I think the guidance is clear that you keep the pre-hyperinflation translation reserve, or CTA, I guess, in OCF. I think that's clear.
I agree that you do not reclassify 100%. I do not agree that you do not reclassify anything. And the point is, I think contrary to Agenda Paper 4A, so Agenda Paper 4A is really for how do you account for hyperinflation and the translation into the currency units of the reporting entity after the local unit has accounted for its accounts using the requirements in IS 29. Here in Agenda Paper 4B is just what is happening at the date of transitioning to IS 29. And the way I see it is that in the local accounts, hence in the consolidation package, hence in the consolidated accounts of the group, there is a change in accounting method that has applied. Before that date, the local unit was not accounting for anything in accordance with IS 29. As from a certain date, then IS 29 applies, and IS 29 requires you to account for it in equity, in the equity of the local unit. So there is really a change in accounting method, a change in accounting principle, and this should reflect in the accounts of the consolidated entity, including from the pre-hyperinflationary CTA accumulated. So what I would do is consider this, and so the restatement, so the reduction in equity that was accounted for in the the restatement in equity that was accounted for in the local unit, you would equally transfer to equity a proportion, this proportion of the CTA accumulated historically, because there is a change in accounting principle, and this should also impact the consolidated accounts. So let's assume you have an equity locally which is 200, you have restated 100, it's a half, so half of the CTA should be reclassified to equity at the date of transitioning to IS 29 in the consolidated accounts, because in principle it's a change in accounting method and this should have a consequence. But for sure, I agree with the staff that you don't reclassify 100% in equity all of a sudden. But still, there, currently in the analysis, there is no acknowledgement that there was a change in accounting methods applied by the local unit that effectively, mechanically transferred to the group accounting just because of the consolidation process.
Lisa? So I agree with the staff paper. I think that the guidance is clear that pre-going hyperinflationary, that goes to OCI and stays in OCI. It's not until you become hyperinflationary and you're in 29 that it actually goes to equity. And maybe that was one of the things that I didn't say on the other paper, is I thought that view A on paper 4A was correct, that when you're in hyperinflationary, it should go to equity. But, yeah, I agree with what's in the paper, and I think it's clear.
Thank you. Brian?
Yes, I'm closer to Bertrand on this one. It seems to me that IFRIC 7 is describing a form of retrospective calculation which envisages that certain items within equity will be recalculated. I don't think it's precisely a question about do you reclassify the foreign currency translation reserve. I think it's do you recalculate it in accordance with the accounting policy you're going to apply going forward. And for that reason, I find it difficult to rule out view A in this paper. Maybe view B is better accounting, because it's the way that we think about what happens to the foreign currency translation reserve, but I'm not sure that view A is specifically ruled out, given how closely the language in IFRIC 7 mirrors the description of a retrospective change in accounting policy in IAS 8. I mean, obviously, the significance of the second question, I mean, I take the staff point that your interest in this question doesn't necessarily end, depending on what your view on paper 4A is. The extent of any reclassification of the foreign currency translation reserve will depend, I think, on what you think your accounting policy will be going forward. But I do think that IFRIC 7 is describing a form of retrospective adoption which could involve reclassifications within equity on the basis of the go-forward accounting policy.
And I guess the counter-argument set out paragraph 37 of the paper, where the staff analysis concludes that the requirements in 7 apply only to the IS29 piece of the equation.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
Yeah. Yeah, so I think that's in paragraph 37 we set out our view, and I think Brian's giving his view and why he is not convinced by that.
All right, so with that, can I see, can we move to question 2, which is on page 11 of the paper?
get a show of hands for whether the committee agrees with the staff recommendation not to add the matter to the standard sitting agenda.
2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Okay, thank you. So with that, can we move then to the wording and the tentative agenda decision? Does anybody have any comments on the wording? No? So can I get a show of hands on who supports the proposed tentative agenda decision?
8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Okay, thank you. We'll see if our respondents agree with you or not. Ryan and Bertram. Okay, so.
And so we'll conclude the discussion, sorry, with agenda paper 4C. In this paper, we discuss whether the reporting entity restates the comparative amount presented for a hyperinflationary foreign operation. The submitter asks two specific questions, which are listed in paragraphs 10 and 11 of the paper. Paragraphs 19 to 24 summarize the findings from outreach and additional research. We understand that entities do not restate comparative amounts in their annual financial statement and that few entities, if any, restate comparative amounts in their interim financial statement. As explained in paragraphs 23 to 27, we have not obtained evidence that the matters in question A and B are widespread. Accordingly, we recommend the committee not add those matters to its standard setting agenda. I would like now to direct your attention to questions 1 and 2 on page 9 of the paper and ask whether you agree with our recommendation, and if yes, whether you have any comments on the proposed wording of the tentative agenda decision as set out in Appendix A to the paper.
Brian.
So here on my small island, my only question, I think, about this is whether at this particular point in time there is sufficient evidence to make this kind of statement about interim reporting. I think Argentina, which is what we're really talking about here, became hyperinflationary last year. So we're talking about what practice we've observed, I think, predominantly in interim financial statements this year. I understand from an earlier discussion with the staff that they've continued to monitor interim reports that have come out since the date of this agenda decision, which seems very sensible, and I assume you would continue to monitor them while any agenda decision was open for comment. Given the particular reason for not taking this onto the agenda, maybe in the penultimate paragraph it would be helpful just to have a yet, with the understanding that if there were to be different or additional evidence or any evidence of diversity that emerged in the interim period, that would be considered.
Yeah, and just if it's helpful to what you're referring to, Brian, is that obviously in the paper we documented our findings from Q1 interim reporting, just in sort of finalising the paper. Vanson also had a look at any half-year interim reporting, and we continued, the same trend continued, which was we found one entity that restated comparatives, but all others did not restate comparatives.
Bonnie?
One question that I had on the tentative agenda decision is if we should also make it clear that we think that no restatement is permitted under IS 21, assuming the committee agrees with that statement.
I suppose at the minute, by the way, I mean, you raise a question for your colleagues because, of course, the paper at the minute doesn't have, or usually, you know, analysis of what the requirements say. So I suppose we haven't put it into the paper, and for you to maybe consider that, because we were. The reason for sort of not recommending standard setting was based on whether it was widespread as opposed to whether we thought the requirements were adequate.
Fair. Lisa?
I was just going to say that I agree with the staff paper, and then also what Bonnie said, that was one of my comments, is whether or not in the tentative conclusion we should include the actual paragraph 43 of IS 21 stating that it's clear that it's, the restatement's not required. That just kind of closes it out.
Just have to analyze this.
Marie?
When we said there is no diversity, we do not say that people do not restate. So, I mean, if we just read the agenda addition without having the paper, we understand that no diversity is it, but we do not know what is the conclusion people have. So I think it's important to have it in the draft agenda decision.
Maybe you could do that, so you could say what you've seen in the research, yeah?
We could say that.
Bruce?
Yeah, so but just following on from the other guys, I mean, I would have answered the question. I mean, I think it's difficult just to say, well, we've observed nothing, when if you really think about this as a continuation of 4B and 4C, I mean, it's all kind of part and parcel of the same package. And I just think we've chosen to answer the ones. I would have answered the question in terms of what we've been asked.
I guess we were trying to be disciplined in terms of making sure that the analysis focuses on things where there's...
I appreciate that, but yeah, I just think we're kind of doing this suite of things involved with this, and I think it's a very valid point this raised, that we haven't got a massive history at the moment of these companies restating or not. So it's almost saying, well, we've got the question, we can preempt that this is going to become an issue because of what's happening in South America. Wouldn't it just make sense to take a look at it?
Bob?
Yeah, I'm similar to others. I don't disagree with the staff analysis at all. It's actually the layout of the agenda decision or proposed agenda decision. If you take a look, if you just step back and you didn't read the paper, all you read was the agenda decision. This starts out, the request asked A or B. We don't answer A or B. Mm-hmm. We just tell you, well, there's no diversity. We don't tell you what people are doing. Just that there's no diversity, and we have obtained no evidence that this has a widespread effect, which I don't know what that means. So I think it'd just be better off just not to issue anything or to, you know, tell people, okay, this is generally what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
After on the committee finishes speaking, maybe it's useful just to give some color on the approach we took on the paper?
Yeah.
Carl?
Yeah, very similar discomfort. I think some requirements are missing here somehow. We are not answering nothing, so I would be supportive as well to mention at least the predominant practice. Would be helpful.
Guy?
I just wanted to make two points. I think to what Petrina was saying, you know, I don't think we, at least right now, can add a statement in the agenda decision about, you know, what the standards require with regard to restatement or not, because it hasn't been analyzed. So we would have to go through that process. But, you know, personally, I think it's pretty clear you don't restate in an annual context, but I think in an interim context, there is perhaps, you know, more room for different perspectives there about earlier periods in the year in which it became hyperinflationary. But I think we would have to go through a proper analysis of that before adding anything to the agenda decision on that. But I do agree with the observation that if we're going to put out an agenda decision saying we're not going to deal with it because we haven't observed diversity, we should explain what we have observed in terms of the practice, i.e. No significant practice of restating.
Yep. And maybe I'll give my understanding of the reason for why the staff took the approach they did in the paper, because they did come and talk to me about it before they did the paper to make sure I was comfortable with it, just to give some colour and then maybe to make a suggestion. So I think in contrast to the questions that are addressed in 4A and 4B, we weren't sure that there was really a lack of clarity in terms of what the requirements are in relation to the question in 4C. And we really don't want to sort of get into a position where we are answering questions where we don't really have uncertainty, to put that in sort of to use an unofficial term. And so, consistent with what we have done, I think, in other cases, we thought that there was therefore a distinction between 4A and 4B, and so there wasn't analysis in the paper, and that's reflected in the fact that there's not an analysis in the tentative agenda decision. And if we were wanting to put an analysis, then I think we'd need to do a paper to support that rather than just saying we're all comfortable, because that would be a bit unusual. However, in response to the comments that a few of you have made, I think we could make an addition to this tentative agenda decision, which is a factual one, which is to observe that when the staff has done this analysis, what they have seen, which would sort of not be giving the analysis, but it would be confirming that accounting. Mm. So maybe that's a way of addressing it sort of obliquely that we could suggest. Would you, staff, looking at you, you're not going to freak out if I get a vote on that? All right, so with that unofficial addition, could I get a show of hands on whether the committee, firstly, I need to formally vote on agreeing with the recommendation not to add this to your standard setting agenda. So let's do that first.
Everyone?
Okay, and then given that decision, can I get a show of hands on the tentative agenda decision with the proposed addition to note what we observed when we did the analysis in practice?
Yes. So and we'll add a yet.
A yet as well. Okay. All right, so with that, can we get a show of hands, please?
And that is, again, everyone.
Great, thank you. And I'm pleased, Brian, that we managed to get something from your little island.
It's only a yet.
With that, I think we've earned our break. So if we could reconvene at 1:35.